Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Project Number 2. January 21st, 1976, interviewing Mr. Milton Porter. Interviewers Marcia Frommerman and Nancy Holmes. Mr. Porter, I wonder if you could tell us about your family. Could you tell us about your mother and father?
I had a mother and father. They were married. I was born in Charleroi, Pennsylvania. See you later. Oh, is it Harry? Yeah, I'll talk. Two younger brothers.
What was your mother's name? Your mother's maiden name?
Mother's name was Jenny. Her maiden name was Mitnick, M-I-T-N-I-C-K. She was born in New York.
And your father?
Father's name was Harry. He was born in Russia.
How old was your father when he came to the United States?
About 21 years old. He was at that time a journeyman watchmaker, a relatively highly paid profession. And subsequently, at that start, he went into the jewelry business.
And how old was your father when he came to the Western Pennsylvania area?
He probably was in his early 20s. He had lived in Joplin, Missouri, for a brief period of time with my mother. I believe they first located in Manesson, Pennsylvania, and then went to Joplin, Missouri, and then returned to Charleroi, Pennsylvania.
And what did your father do in Charleroi?
He was a jeweler and optician. At that time, anyone with the will to win could become an optician or optometrist. Subsequently, he took his state board examinations and was a registered optometrist and jeweler.
You mentioned that you had brothers. Were they older or younger?
My two younger brothers were both younger.
How much younger than you were they?
One was 3 years younger and one was 7 years younger. One is 7 years younger.
Could you tell us your birth date?
My birth date is March the 2nd, 1911.
Did you have your primary and secondary schooling in Charleroi?
I did.
And where did you go on to schooling after that?
To the University of Pittsburgh, then undergraduate school of business administration, and had a graduate mid-year, and had a half year of graduate work there, primarily in statistics. And then went to Duquesne Knight Law School for one semester while I was working.
We would like to know something about your early life in Charleroi. What was it like growing up in Charleroi?
Really, you can't answer a question like that quickly, and to write a psychological or sociological study on life in a small town for a young Jewish boy or girl who frequently was the only Jew in any of his classes, it really is beyond the scope of what I think you want to talk about here. The opportunities for growth and expansion were relatively limited, had to be really sought after, and it really is too involved a thing to sit down and discuss at this point without doing the whole subject injustice.
In fact, you did hit upon one of the things that we're most interested in, and that was, how did the young Jewish boy and girl make it and get along in the small towns that surrounded this area?
I don't know that they really made it. I think that I can't recall too many people who made it, too many boys who made it athletically. As a matter of fact, offhand, I can't recall any of my contemporaries who did. A few of us made it scholastically, but even that was unnecessarily limited because of the lack of any kind of educational planning with the individual student that might have been available at that time. We made it really out of intellectual curiosity and possibly driven by the lack of other outlets. One of my colleagues, contemporaries really, made it intellectually in an extremely productive way. It was a man named Sidney Krasick, who was always first in all of our classes. He later became the head of the Westinghouse atomic energy program during World War II. He was brilliant, and usually I was a relatively poor second in our classes, where they contained both of us. What else? What's going down, Mrs. Promar?
I'm pausing so you have time to think.
No, I don't need to think.
In your high school classes, did you feel that you were fairly well prepared for college work in Charleroi High School?
I was very well prepared for college work. But I was not very well prepared for selecting the college or understanding what I should have selected from a course standpoint. I think that I did the right thing, possibly not in the right place. But that was a matter of a combination of accident, dissatisfaction, and having some idea of what I liked and didn't like. Obviously, some of these ideas were affected by high school education, but I feel very strongly that I didn't get the kind of broadening of viewpoint, exposure to choices, and any advice whatsoever on this whole subject of choosing a college or a type of course that I should pursue in college.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Could you tell me, either in primary school or in secondary school, were you ever the object of any anti-Semitism?
The problem, I think, was not anti-Semitic in the normal sense of the word, but it was, I think, more a personal kind of a situation where there would be I really can't say that I was exposed to any more anti-Semitism than any other individual of a different religious background might have been subjected to. I never thought in terms of anti-Semitism. I did think only in terms of my own relationship to the people around me. If it was anti-Semitic, I never thought of it as such, but simply thought of it as my inability to meet whatever the problems were at that particular time. I wasn't interested in conducting a study in the situation. I was only interested in getting along myself.
Was there a synagogue in Charleroi in the days you were growing
yes,
up?
Yes, there was.
How many families? Do you have any idea how many families?
40 families.
Uh-huh. Was there any religious training going on for the young people?
Yes, there was. There was a Sunday school from which I was from which I was expelled for good and sufficient reason.
Do you care to share that with us?
Yes, I attacked two substitute superintendents on one occasion when the superintendent was away in what I continue to look back on as the precursor of some of the Marx Brothers' wilder movies. I completed my Sunday school education in Manesson, PA.
Were you bar mitzvah?
I was bar mitzvah and did a noble job from then on with Mofter on Yom Kippur.
Therefore, shall we assume that the synagogue in Charleroi was an Orthodox synagogue?
You are wrong. It was a conservative synagogue.
And do you today belong to a conservative congregation?
No, I don't. I belong to Rodef Sholem, and you'll have to tell me whether it's Orthodox, conservative, or Reformed.
Can we talk for a moment about your home life when you were growing up? Could you describe for us the atmosphere of your home, cultural, economic, religious?
We were in fair economic circumstances. The family was not particularly religious. My mother did light the candles on Friday evening. What else?
Could you tell us, what did your parents do for recreational activities, and even, in fact, you as a young boy growing up?
I can't tell you what my parents did for recreational activities, but I read a great deal, and did a good deal of shop work in woodcraft and other things.
Where did you learn how to do the shop type work?
This was largely self-taught, although my father was very handy with tools.
Was your workshop available in your home?
We had a workshop in the basement.
Did Charleroi or anywhere in the surrounding area offer any other cultural activities to you, like concerts, plays, and so forth?
No. And I wasn't particularly interested in concerts, but I was very much interested in theatricals. High school class plays type of thing.
And there were such things as high school plays for you to participate in?
We all thought there were. The audience wasn't always sure.
Did you have any grandparents or aunts and uncles living nearby?
No.
How far away were they?
I had a grandmother living in New York. She died when I was about 17. She was an extremely interesting person, and I've often thought would have been the subject, as many of the older people were, for a novel on the Jew in America.
Could you tell us what was particularly interesting about her?
Well, she weighed 90 pounds and wore about 12 petticoats. She was also well-educated, had been the leader of the family in this country, and had made a number of trips back and forth to the old home in Russia. And had been the first meeting point for subsequent arrivals among families and friends.
Do you happen to remember the name of the town that she came from that she would revisit?
Yes, let's see, I think that I'm not clear whether she came from now I can't remember the name of the town that she came from, although I believe my father and others in the family came from Mariampol, Mariampol, where Lillian Freehoff also came, from whence Lillian Freehoff came.
Could you tell us that grandmother's name, please?
Sophie. Sophie Mitnick.
Mitnick.
Obviously my mother's name.
Right. Let's talk about the years when you went to the University of Pittsburgh. Could you tell us what Pitt was like in those days for you as a young student?
Well, leaving out the most significant element, which would be girls, it was a one step higher in the intellectual challenge area, and the opportunity to primarily to write a little bit in some of the English courses, and it was an odd period because I entered school in 1928, and 1 year later we had the beginnings of the Depression of 1929. I did belong to a fraternity, Pi Lambda Phi, and as I look back on the period, it was one of primarily working at school at the on doing the work, doing school work or doing college work, and there were, of course, in the city, great opportunities at that time to see theater. Pittsburgh was a tryout town and also was on the schedule of many of the plays and musicals that were available then. I developed a very active interest in fencing, and the only place available was, the place most readily available was the YMWHA. And I fenced there for a number of years and also conducted classes there at a later time.
Hmm. For, during your student years?
During my student years and subsequently.
What was life socially like at Pitt during those years?
Well, I think that Pitt at that time was a pretty dismal school, socially, intellectually, from a variety of standpoints. Of course, I didn't have any standard of judgment. I just felt at the time that it didn't meet my ideas of what a college or university should give. There were some outstanding people in the faculty, but by and large, I think the faculty were representative of the school, which was certainly not the would certainly not rank high in any national rating. It was. I may deny all this later, but it was a relatively pedestrian kind of a school. There were some outstanding and or interesting faculty, but the average was really, really poor.
Did any faculty members particularly influence you?
No, nobody influenced me, but I had a great influence on them.
Where did you live while you were going to Pitt?
I lived at the we had delayed rushing at that time, and I lived in on North Craig Street in a rooming house for the first semester, and after that, until my senior year, I lived at the fraternity house on Bithridge Street, and then moved into an apartment with two of my classmates.
Immediately upon graduating, what did you then do?
Well, immediately upon graduating, I went back to graduate school for a half year, because the job market in January of 1932 was very dismal. But I did get a job by the conclusion of that first semester, working for a local office of a food manufacturing, local sales office of a food manufacturing company.
And what was the name of that company?
The name of the company was Food Town Kitchens, Incorporated. It was connected with the, it was formed by a man named John Kellogg, a son of W.K. Kellogg, who went to competition with Papa. It was, they later made love to each other, and he abandoned this project. But the manager of that company and myself used the paid up balance of our office rent to start a food brokerage business, which I later owned in its entirety until I left that business to come with the L.B. Foster Company in 1945.
Now, how long were you with this Kellogg operation before you went into your own food brokerage?
Less than a year.
And the name of the food brokerage company that you put together?
In its final years, it was called... It was the Joe A. Masury, M-A-S-U-R-Y company.
And could you describe to us what you did for the company and what the company
No,
did?
It's not... There were only two of us in the business. There were two owners and a number of salesmen, and we did all the things that a food broker normally does. It's too detailed to go into, but we represented food manufacturers and manufacturers of kindred products and sold them to the various chains and wholesale groups in the tri-state area. Although at a later time we opened an office in New York and we extended our operation. But that's
I see.
So
okay, that's what we wanted to know. And then how did you get from that into this company, this L.B. Foster company?
Well, my wife is a Foster, and I became well acquainted with her uncle through family affairs and playing golf. And at some time, about 7 years after we were married, there was an opening here, and he asked me if I would care to join the company.
Okay, you have mentioned your wife. Could you tell us how you met your wife?
In the interest of staying married, I think that we ought to simply say that I knew my wife for a number of years, casually, primarily through fraternity dances. But it wasn't until shortly before we married, it wasn't until the year that we married, that we saw each other wasn't until the year that we married that we actually had a date.
Okay, and the month and year that you and your wife got married?
Well, it was very appropriate because we married on Armistice Day, 1938. And for those of you who can remember that far, Armistice Day used to be on November the 11th.
Huh? When you married, you and your wife then lived where?
We lived at the Ambassador Apartments in the apartment that I had maintained up to that time.
Uh-huh. Okay, now can we talk about your work in this company, in the L.B. Foster Company? Tell us what this company does and what your role is.
Well, for my sins, I'm the chief executive officer and president of this company. We are a privately owned distributor, manufacturer, fabricator, warehouser for group of allied lines of specialty steel products. We do business throughout the nation, some 30 locations, with two offices abroad, and the company is, I think, well regarded as a leader
in virtually all of the fields that we're in.
How old?
Now, I can talk to you for two solid weeks on this subject, so I think that the company was started in 1902.
Has it changed much over the years since you have been with the company?
The company has changed substantially in the period since 1945. That's some 30 years ago. But it still maintains the original lines of the company that existed at that time. While some new lines of products have been added to the company's list of materials, list of products, our primary growth has come from geographical expansion and the functional expansion of the things that we do with the products that we're involved in. Today, about 40% of our volume is in manufactured products, activities that we literally did not engage in as recently as 1965. 1966. Obviously, all of these things weren't the result of my coming with the company, because in the early years of the company, I was busy learning it, understanding it, and doing the jobs that fell to my responsibility.
So you've mentioned that in the last decade there have been some changes made here. As you look into this next decade, do you foresee any additions or changes in the company?
You're touching on something that we spend a number of weeks a year giving thought to and working on. Obviously, there will be changes, not only in our company, but in virtually every company in the United States. Job of the manager is to determine as best he can what those changes will be that he has no possibility of affecting, and what changes he can affect, and how he can adapt himself to both classes of how he can adapt himself and his company to both classes of situations. So will there be changes? Hell yes.
Okay, I wonder if now we could go back a bit and talk about your life as a young married man. What was Pittsburgh like in those days, and what did you do for recreational activity?
Pittsburgh wasn't very much different in those days than it is now.
And what did you and your wife do for recreational activities?
I just don't think it's important. I mean, we never thought of things that we do for recreation. You do certain things, and you either have fun at them or you don't have fun at them, and if you don't have fun at them, you do something else. So
we're interested in your interests as a young man.
I played golf. I still do. We used to attend the theater a great deal, but theater has disappeared in Pittsburgh, and I have no interest in I have no particular interest in much of the theater that exists here now, even though I must say, in fairness to some of the new efforts, I haven't had the exposure either.
Could you talk for a moment about your community interests in Pittsburgh?
I spent a great deal of time by accident in various capacities at Westmoreland Country Club. I can't really call that a community interest, but it did give some exposure to the general social process by which some things happen social groups. I was led into taking an interest on the Planning and Budgeting Committee of the United Jewish Federation, and dealt with, under Dr. Rosenberg, some of the early studies having to do with the South Hills. Subsequently got involved in similar studies having to do with the YM and WHA, including the East Liberty Project, both at its inception and at its later divestiture. Part of the time,